Call the meeting to order, and we will look at the minutes at a later date when we have quorum. Representative Yaris, would you like to move your bill?
Okay. I move that House File 1660 be recommended to pass or be considered for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, lady, House File 1660, and they'll explain it better, is a bill that would appropriate $250,000 to St. Louis County for feasibility studies and planning activities concerning additional uses for St. Louis County Arts, Heritage Arts and Center in Duluth. Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair,
could you say your name for the record, please?
John Ungaro, Government Relations Director for St. Louis County.
Thank you.
The purpose of this bill is to have a comprehensive study done that will examine the entire depot building in Duluth, specifically known as the St. Louis County Heritage and Arts Center, and determine what the highest and best use of this city and county landmark truly can be. The reason this study is needed now is because we are suddenly making giant strides towards making the building a multimodal transportation hub, and this means hundreds of thousands of tourists and passengers will be passing through this building every year. It is imperative that we provide these customers with the kind of experience, amenities, and retail options which other successful Renaissance depots across the nation that have been converted back into working train stations have experienced. In other words, we want to emulate the best from the best and incorporate all of what they have to offer into this one building. The attractiveness, convenience, and quality of amenities and services at rail stations are key features to have in place if ridership on passenger rail trains will be sufficient to turn a profit. By combining commuting, shopping, eating, entertaining, and sleeping, there is a formula which other successful train stations have magically managed to capture and put into practice. This appropriation will allow us to hire the same kind of experts that these other successful venues have been able to use. These experts have the proven experience that clarifies long-term management and maintenance responsibilities, identifies funding sources and public-private partnerships, along with housing opportunities, commercial space, and how to link the station with a larger community and its secondary development opportunities. Madam Chair and members, in summation, this study is designed to help ensure a viable train station that produces a steady stream of revenue for both this magnificent building and the resurrection of passenger rail service between the Twin Ports and the Twin Cities. I'll now turn to Ken Bueller.
Thank you, Mr. Ungaro. Would you state your name for the record, too, please?
Ken Bueller. I'm Executive Director of the Historic Union Depot Corporation, which is the management arm for the St. Louis County Heritage and Arts Center, the depot, from the Lake Superior Railroad Museum. And obviously, we're interested in this because the building is changing as the needs change. 2 years ago, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, in a thing called the PDI, Preservation Development Initiative, was asked to come in and take a look at Duluth and the surrounding area as a place for a niche market that is fastly growing, which is historic tourism, people who are looking for an historic experience in their travels. These are, because we're becoming an older nation, these are older people who have spent their time in water parks and now are looking for something a little more stimulating. The National Trust said at the end of their study, which they released last year, that Duluth and the surrounding area had an embarrassingly large wealth of opportunity. In another study that went along with that, they looked at the St. Louis County Heritage and Arts Center, the depot, and said this should be, using my words, ground zero for that market. When somebody came to our area to find an experience in historic tourism, they would come to the depot first. And there they would find out information on the history of the area. There they could book historic architectural tours, walking tours, home tours. They could find out about the Glen Sheen Estates and make a reservation to tour. They could learn about the train service on the North Shore Scenic Railroad and Lake Superior in Mississippi out by the zoo, which is a wonderful Works Project Administration zoo. Also, they could find out about the B&Bs that are in historic mansion district. I asked Carolyn Brackett, who did the study, to take a look at this particular legislation. Carolyn Brackett is with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and she did the study both on the PDI side and also on the special look at the depot itself and how that would fit into this market. And I asked her to take a look at the legislation, and she's written a letter of recommendation, which I'd like to pass out to members of the committee. And I'd just like to quote one thing. She obviously endorses this bill, offer enthusiastic support for a $250,000 funding request submitted by Historic Indian Depot, St. Louis County Heritage and Arts Center. You can grab a bunch of the whole lot of them there. And she points out that the reason for this is that the depot is located in downtown Duluth, access to the freeway. As Mr. Ungaro mentioned, soon we hope to be the return of rail passenger service between the Twin Ports and the Twin Cities. Obviously, these people would also be interested in historic tourism. It's an arts, culture, and history center. It's easy to find. It's large, chateauesque architecture. Definitely sticks out from the Duluth skyline. For all these reasons, she recommends that efforts be moved forward to A, turn this into a working railroad station, and again, as a, use my words, ground zero for people coming to look for a historic architectural experience in a historic place in a wonderful city on the shore of Lake Superior, Duluth, Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bueller. Are there any questions from members? Hearing none, Representative Jarrett, would you like to further move the bill or refresh the motion, rather?
Yeah, I move that House File 1660 be considered in the for the inclusion of the omnibus bill.
It is included.
Well, thank you. Also, we have some other thank you. We have another group.
Yes.
I think we came from California.
Pretty definite,
right? From out of town, too.
No awful.
One of the people testifying is from LA that he is
Okay. And we have to still be on that form, so we have to push the way through that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee, too. I also dropped in there a latest copy of our Junction magazine. If you have insomnia problems and enjoy trains, you'll enjoy that magazine.
I was looking for the Petticoat Junction.
I don't see the other authors here, so we'll pick up 2068. I'm going to do this one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, House File 2068 is the appropriate money for Minnesota Film and TV Board. Which is actually a film board. It used to be a film board, which is part of the tourism department. And who's going to explain this?
My name is Lucinda Winter. I'm the executive director at the Minnesota Film and TV Board. And basically, what we're asking for is, and I think what I'm here to do really is explain how we've done with our one-time appropriation that we have been we were provided with by the 2006 legislature, because based on the success of that of our use of that money, we are asking for the funding and thus the program to continue. Snowbait is a film production jobs program using the word film to include television, commercials, music videos, documentaries, that went active in mid-July, and we began accepting applications in mid-July. After the bill was passed in May, we put the program together and put it up. So we've been functional since the middle of July. And what I have in a handout for you is an overview of the economic impact that the Jobs Fund is providing to the state of Minnesota. And I'm basically here to tell you that the program has taken off. To date, we've had 24 snowbank applications that have been received and approved in our office. 8 of them are feature films, 11 are commercials, 5 are TV series, and 1 is a documentary. The way this works is people apply at the beginning of their project. They have to provide it with us with a budget so that we understand what their budget parameters are, and they have to provide us with an estimated Minnesota spend at that time so that we can estimate what their rebate would be, and we keep track of that. And then as their project progresses and they're finished with their production, they turn in a reimbursement request, which is completely audited by a bookkeeper in our office. And at that time, we make sure that all of the expenses the Minnesota spent that they have submitted reimbursement requests for is appropriately, you know, they have receipts and they have all the backup for payroll and all of that. And then we send a check request to Explore Minnesota Tourism. So that's how it works. As you might imagine, production being what it is, you start to program up, people apply, then they have to get their program up and running, their film, their TV series starts, a commercial, whatever. So what we're experiencing now in the spring is, while things were a little bit slow to start, now we're seeing a lot of reimbursement requests come in for productions that have now shot, have now finished their production and are asking for the reimbursement requests. And where is the money coming from? It's kind of coming, and the projects are coming from all over. With me today, I have Melissa Butts, who is producing a documentary. She lives in Minnesota, but her project that she's doing, a very large documentary, is being funded by science museums across the United States. And I'll let her tell you a little bit about how Snowbait has influenced that project being here, being produced here, as opposed to Montreal. And then also with me, I have Michael Hewen. And Michael is here as co-producer on a feature called Dead of Winter. That he's from LA, as is the funding and the production company for that feature. And very clearly, it's a feature that was also attracted to our state by Snowbait. So I can go over these numbers if you care to later, but it might be interesting to just hear from two people who are actually participating in the Snowbait program about that. So
thank you, Ms. Winters. And just say your name for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Melissa Butts, B-U-T-T-S, and I am a producer and founder of Mallory Pictures, a production company based in Minneapolis. Chairman Yaris and committee members, I had a wonderful opportunity with the incentive most recently, about a month ago. I have a distributor in Los Angeles who is funding this program. It's a 3D digital theatrical release in museums similar to IMAX films. And my distributor said, we'll get the money and you will go to Canada, to Montreal. And I said, I basically put the brakes on it, and I said, I have a team based here in Minneapolis that can do this film, and not only do I have a team, but I have an incentive. And I will work to match or meet what Montreal's production company was putting out. And I went to a collective group of local companies that are, you know, in Minneapolis, and asked them, would you come to, you know, my, as be a team member with me, like animation houses, post-production facilities, technology providers, because 3D digital cinema is very much an emerging market in its infancy stage. And so what I had to do is essentially educate these people, immediately get them up to speed, and convince my distributor based in Los Angeles that, hey, this film could be made here in the Twin Cities, and as a result of that, there's several $100,000 that will be spent here locally.
Thank you, Ms. Butts. Yes, please state your name for the record.
Yes, I'm Michael Hewens. I'm a film producer from Los Angeles, California. And I'm working with Jeff Fisher, who's a director, and Cornelia Taylor, who's a producer in Los Angeles. And Jeff and Cornelia had approached me about a project they had called Dead of Winter, and we were looking for a place to film. Jeff had spent some time in Michigan, but they offered no film incentive for an independent film such as ours. Our budget is, you know, a little under a couple million dollars, which is really small in Los Angeles. So we started looking at other states, and Jeff said, how about Minnesota? They have this snow bay. So Cornelia and I did a budget. We factored it into the budget. I think we filled out our preliminary paperwork yesterday. We're estimating right now we're going to spend somewhere around a half million dollars in the state, employ about 70 people. probably be here for 2 to 3 months, and you know, cast local people, hire local crew, you know, purchase and rent a lot of local equipment. And with the incentive that the Snowbait offered, it's sort of best in a lot of states that we could go to make this kind of movie. There was no other state that really offered the locations we needed and the crews we needed with this kind of an incentive. So that's why we're here. We've been here a couple of weeks, and you know, we're having a great experience. Yeah, we start shooting in mid-April.
Thank you. Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, who wants my screenplay?
I'll read it.
Hey, the book is coming out in 2 weeks, but that's another story. What was your name?
Lucinda.
In the last year, how many projects were there?
Snowbait projects?
Yes.
Well, there are 24 that have applied and been approved that are in our system. Is that the question you're asking?
That's for this coming year?
There are 24 that, right. Starting in July of 2006 when we first opened this for applications, through now, we've had 24 applications.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative.
Madam Chair, Lucinda, now how much, I suppose it varies project to project, but could you give me a range of how much they'll be receiving from this?
Ms. Winters?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can tell you that, actually. If we were to look at the entire appropriation, if we can look at it that way, or we can look at to date, whichever you prefer. But basically, the estimated Minnesota expenditures from the productions that will run through Snowbait is about $9,230,000. And the estimated rebate total to producers and production companies is 15% of that, about $1,300,000.
Okay. Madam Chair, the dead of winter. Michael.
Yeah.
So in the budget that you just did, how much are you anticipating from this program?
Right now we're anticipating, right now we're estimating we're going to spend about $500,000 here, which would mean we'd get about $75,000 back. But our budget is actually creeping upwards right now, and we actually spend about $300,000 more here. We're just working on that right now, but we're finalizing the financing in Los Angeles to cover that.
Okay.
Representative
Chair, Lucinda, and so you're asking for how much for this year then, for this biennium?
Ms. Winters.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we've got a request in. We are in the governor's budget for some money for Snowbait for the next 2 years, $500,000 for each year, and this bill is $1.2 million in addition to that to bring us back for $1.7 million.
Okay, and one
Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, do you get the a tax credit as well?
No, we do not operate, we don't operate a tax credit in the state right now.
Okay.
We just have the rebate and a lodging exemption after 30 days. It's another form of incentive we can offer. But that's not unique to us.
All right, thank you.
Are there any further questions?
No.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for the uninitiated, I guess, this question. What brings you to Minnesota besides the 15% in the Sweetland? And the reason I asked that question, I ended up owning a building a few years ago that had a production studio in it. And so I then spent some period of time seeing where the other studios were in this metro area and kind of learned out, figured out where they are. What are you using up here in facilities besides money? What brings you to Minnesota?
Well, thank you. Jeff Fisher had written the script originally from an experience he had in Michigan up in the Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
Shooting a reality show, and he was sort of stranded in a cabin. So when we started looking at locations that we could get there were really available to us, and we considered the Snowbait, I said we should go to a place like Minnesota, and then we should look in the rural areas outside of the big city. And look, just taking California for instance, you'd have to go probably 100 miles outside of Los Angeles to find a rural area that's even comparable to anything we could find 20 minutes outside of the Twin Cities. So when you start thinking about something as simple as transporting 100 crew people and 20 cast each day, 20 minutes versus 3.5 hours. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're renting all of our camera equipment, all of our lighting equipment, you know, all of our, you know, technical equipment, cranes, dollies, camera cars, picture vehicles, all that's coming from Minnesota.
And, no, sure. And they are here and they are available in the technology.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't found, I mean, you know, I had never been to Minnesota, and so my MO when I got here was, you know, work with Lucinda, just find out what's here crew-wise, what's here equipment-wise. If we don't have something, we'll bring it in from Los Angeles. But so far, I've been really surprised. We haven't really had to think about bringing stuff in from Los Angeles, which, of course, itself would be very expensive in terms of shipping. We've been able to find, so far, we've been pretty lucky in our department with our props, our costumes, all those things. We're able to get a lot of that here in the Twin Cities area.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Would you want to expand on that?
Madam Chair, members, this is exactly what we want to happen because we have very skilled crew here. We have people who can, you know, tow a picture car so they can shoot the car moving down the road. We have people here with cranes. We have a lot of the production equipment and lighting equipment that features and documentaries of a scale that Melissa's working on in post-production facilities. And these are all people who want to work. These are people who want to stay in Minnesota. And what we're trying very hard to do is bring more pictures here, whether they be a documentary or whether they be a TV series, which actually they hire people for longer periods of time. These are people who have been experiencing a real dry spell since about 2003, and we really want these people to be able to work. We also would like to have opportunities for emerging people who, in their 20s, who are getting out of school. This is a very attractive industry to people, and we want to keep those people in Minnesota working. We don't want them to leave the state.
One last question, Madam Chair. And I'm assuming, therefore, your request for next year is the $1.7 million each of the 2 years is just replicating the 206.
Because we really believe that we're just now really, it's really ramping up now. We got two more applications in just today. And like any program, it took a few months for us to get the word out for projects to start rolling in. But we're really seeing a huge ramp up now, and I'm very confident in being able to utilize those appropriations to bring money and jobs to the state.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
I have to do this again. Have you had any touch base at all with the Sweetland movie that's starting to ramp up?
I know, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I know Ali Saleem, the gentleman who directed the movie, and the fact that he was, you know, and that was a huge movie for Montevideo because it brought a lot of money into that area and a lot of civic pride. Now they're starting to see the tourism afterglow of that movie because people are starting to go to Montevideo and ask where the farmhouse is, and they're starting to see some of that afterglow. What it really is important, other than the fact that it honestly is a beautiful movie, is that it's put Minnesota on the map in the indie feature world.
Better than Fargo. Yeah.
It's certainly a different take on Minnesota than Fargo is. But it's also really been a good, it's really been good for Ali Saleem because he was able to make an incredible movie for under $2 million in Minnesota using Minnesota locations and crew, and his next movie is going to be much easier for him to fund and much easier for him to make because of the acclaim that film's getting.
And it was a Minnesota investment community that backed it.
Just as important as that is that it was a Minnesota investment community, as was Prairie Home, which has also been a real shot in the arm because one area of course, of the production community that I would also like to nurture is the investment side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any further questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just have a comment. Last year I was at a birthday party and one of the guests was a classmate of our son's high school class, and he said he works for one of the, I forgot which company in Hollywood, he's an accountant, and he said that we have, Minnesota has a disadvantage because of something that, you know, and I forgot what it is. Are you familiar with that?
A disadvantage in what?
I think probably something dealing with tax, if I'm, you know, I don't know, he mentioned it.
Just to speak to that, and this is something, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that I would like to address at, you know, as I try to strengthen our incentive program. A lot of states don't have sales tax on their features. We do have sales tax on our features. We do not have sales tax on commercials. So you can produce a commercial here and you will not be taxed for the inputs to make that commercial, but you will be for features. And when you think about it, and purely, obviously there's a cost to the state for eliminating the tax, but if you're looking at it from the perspective of an independent producer and you've got a 15% rebate and then you add to that 6.5%, what you're really talking about is, at least on those goods and rental items that you're taxed on, is even more of an incentive. Exactly. So that's the can of worms I plan on trying to open it another, you know, in another session.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other further questions? If not,
I'm kind of weighing in on this. There's a building in Edina that was the sound studio, production studio for Jimmy Jam and Jerry Lewis.
Terry Lewis.
That has now been vacated and they're starting to tear it down.
Is that in Edina?
Yeah. Okay. And the reason I know it, because I'm involved in the building right next door. And again, that to me is a resource in this whole area of production, communication, entertainment, that has vacated, and there's probably nothing, you can't talk about it, but I mean, it's all part of the same industry that is a real loss.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, as, Madam Chair and members of the committee, as Michael said to me out in the hall, which is a really good point, I mean, there's two, there is a little film in the Snowbait program. It was only a $20,000 feature. A young man named Brian applied, and we approved him for Snowbait because he had his money in escrow in the bank. He had all his T's crossed, his I's dotted. And I want to, in some way, I want to provide even a couple Minnesota emerging artists with the ability to make their movie, because I believe that this is a growth industry. Entertainment's a huge U.S. export. We should have a little piece of that, and we have to be nurturing people who are coming up the ranks. His next movie is not going to be $20,000. It's going to be much bigger than that, and he's going to work with people that he's had success with here before. That's how all the, you know, you work with people that you've learned you work well with. I want to see those people stay in the state, because there's a lot of creative talent here. There are other Ollie Salims here, and it's important to our state, I think, that we encourage them. Because this is an industry that's very attractive. It provides white-collar jobs. Mm-hmm. And we need jobs that are attractive to keep our young people in the state, and this is one industry that clearly does that. Mm-hmm.
If there are no further questions, I'd like to thank you for your testimony and ask Representative Vera to renew his motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming. I renew my motion that House Bill 2068 be considered for inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We will include it for possible inclusion.
Possible.
Consider it for possible inclusion.
Probable.
Probable.
Okay, whatever. They're both in that direction. Okay, let's see. We have one person from out of town. Anybody else? Yeah, we don't count. No. Anyway, we don't have a quorum. See, we do? Okay. So maybe we can take up the out of town resident Doty. This is a simple bill, and I move that House File 756 be recommended to pass to and referred to Finance Committee and then go to the floor on a consent. Perhaps we can't do a consent because it's got to go through. Well, I guess it doesn't. It just passes through Finance. So if we place on the consent calendar, because this is just a technical bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
You have before you in the House research the entire brief language that we are trying to appeal with House File 756. That was a bill that, as written, could only apply to the city of Little Falls, Minnesota. That legislation was intended to deal with property located entirely within the city of Little Falls and owned entirely by the city of Little Falls. The unanimous vote of the City Council of Little Falls is to have this legislation repealed, and so that's the intent of this legislation. I have with me today Tony Wetzel, Little Falls City Attorney. She'll give you more detailed information, and we both stand for any questions that you might have.
Welcome. Could you please identify yourself for the record?
Thank you. Tony Wetzel, and I'm the City Attorney for Little Falls. Mr. Chair, representatives, we're here today, as Representative Doty stated, to request for the repeal of this law. And the basic reason is that if you look at the law, clearly it applies only to the city of Little Falls. And secondly, it places restrictions on the city's ability to manage these properties to the extent where the cities can no longer do anything with these properties. And in fact, it has resulted in a complete shutdown two of the properties, those properties being the main intent and subject of this initial law. And because of that, the cities are now asking for this repeal so that they can again manage these properties, try and pay for the basic and necessary operations. And secondly, they're asking this because this is clearly a local issue which they feel should be placed in local hands, and that it can best be handled on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis by the local government.
Thank you. Representative Kahn has a question.
Yes, I would suggest it not go on the consent calendar. But I think there was so. The question is, would you tell us a little bit about the properties that it's talking about?
Is that direct to me?
Yes.
Anyone? Mr. Chair, representative. Little Falls has basically four properties on the National Register. Two of them are mansions. They were old mansions that were gifted to the city by a lumber baron. Actually, his daughter gifted them to the city along with a $1 million trust. Those are the two properties that this bill was geared to address. The other two properties are a public library and our Convention and Visitors Bureau, which seeks to bring in tourism and income into the community. And the reason this bill was first enacted was previously there was an attempt by some private developers to purchase the property, and it was believed that they intended on raising both of the mansions and putting up some type of a modern development. The city opposed this, the community vehemently opposed it, and that was the immediate reaction, was to try and pass this bill to stop that from occurring. Once it occurred, however, it had unintended consequences, the major one being not only could they no longer serve to engage in any activity with respect to leasing out these buildings for baptisms or weddings or weekend retreats, but it also prevented the city of Little Falls from legally operating its library. That is on the National Register, and that's leased out to the library board. And according to the language in this bill, we legally cannot do that. And so that poses a problem where we're at risk of losing our public library. Additionally, the same applies to our Convention Bureau. That property was previously owned, I believe, by Senator Rosenmeier. And now whether that was gifted to the city or whether the city ultimately purchased that property, right now our Convention and Visitors Bureau or Tourist Bureau sits in there, and they're operating on a lease or they rent from the city, and they seek to bring in substantial revenue to our small community as well. And if we can't get this bill repealed in a hurry, we're at risk of having a complete shutdown of all of those properties.
I guess my question is, what about the, now obviously this could be fixed up to exempt those properties. What about the ones that the bill was originally aimed at? What about the ones that, the two that were supposedly going to be taken down? And that's
What the city has done to address that is they have taken a task force, and they've appointed a task force, and most of the members on that task force are interested citizens who have previously worked on those properties on a volunteer basis, doing gardens, doing landscaping, cleaning, improving those mansions. And the point of the task force is to try and find an appropriate way to run them, yet maintain their historic integrity. And that's why that task force was instituted, and that is the goal. But again, without the ability to run those, while they're trying to strategize and brainstorm to find a way to continue to preserve them and manage them, if we have a complete shutdown, those buildings are going to deteriorate in a hurry. They're very, very large mansions, and they need constant maintenance. And if we can't tap into any type of resource to run them now, they're going to suffer, and as a result, the community is going to suffer in the loss of these treasures.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I know that this was passed to protect those two buildings. It was obviously written badly in terms of the other effects that it has. But what makes us, how do we know that when we repeal this, that those two buildings will then be in danger again?
How do you know that they won't be?
That they won't be.
A couple of different reasons. Number one, the voters spoke very loud and very clear last November, and made it very clear that was a main catalyst and a major upturning of council members. And so I think they're highly motivated to support this. And the task force members that we have on there are people that have been in this community for a very long time and have already expressed volunteer interest in it. And also the main concern with this is to try and run these very large, very expensive mansions, yet preserve their historic character. There are an infinite number of possibilities with what may be done, what could be done, what needs to be done. And to have a study that requires them to wait for 2 years and to take all these other steps could be very burdensome and could result in a missed opportunity in someone who does, you know, make an offer to the city to say, we can turn this into a bed and breakfast and we'll contract to retain its historic character. And that's my concern, is I don't think without making a law that's 300 pages long that you could adequately address or predict every contingency or option that may come up that the city would need to decide on to preserve these mansions. And that is their intent, and the community made it very clear that is their desire with respect to these two mansions.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to also speak to that for Representative Kahn. The political repercussions of that were, as mentioned, definitely settled in the last election. We have the unanimous request from the new city council, who is definitely committed to this. A secondary issue to this...
You're saying that Representative Blaine was right about one thing.
I didn't come here to ask my predecessor. I came here to respond to the request of the city council that I now represent. The buildings will be in good hands. A secondary issue here, however, the League of Minnesota Cities is very much interested in seeing legislation like this designed to have a city run from St. Paul go away. I sympathize with that as well.
Any other questions from committee members?
Chairman. Why didn't someone take this to court to have it declared unconstitutional? Did you think about that?
Madam Chair, this was taken to court. I will let City Attorney Wessel speak to that.
Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, a lawsuit was commenced last year against the state of Minnesota to the tune of, for the city, approximately $10,000 to date, and I don't know how much it's cost the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. That was instituted last year to declare this unconstitutional because there were constitutional issues with how it was passed. That was a prior city attorney. I'm the new city attorney, and when we came in and with the new city council, they determined that perhaps there was a less expensive, more efficient, expedient way to skin this cat. And that was, since this was adopted and applies only to the city of Little Falls, since there was a unanimous agreement that it should be repealed and a unanimous agreement that these mansions should be preserved, we did currently dismiss that lawsuit, but it's dismissed without prejudice, and with the hopes of being able to repeal this expediently. If we can't, That lawsuit will need to be recommenced at great expense not only to the city of Little Falls, but to the Minnesota taxpayers. We don't want to go there.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, so we are laying this bill?
No, I think
the bill
that's it.
Okay, very sorry. Okay. Thank you very much. Those in favor that House File 756 be passed and referred to the committee, the Finance Committee, with recommendation to be sent to the consent calendar, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. And that's you. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Okay, next we're going to hear from Representative Morrow for Bill 2099.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very quick on this, although I can't introduce the bill.
Why don't you hold on just a moment, Representative Morrow? Okay. All right, I'd like to move that Representative Morrow's bill, 2099, be read and referred to the Committee on Finance. You may now discuss your bill, Mr. President.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very quick. You had an opportunity to hear Representative Burdahl's bill that's essentially very similar, if not almost exactly the same. My bill differs only in, I think, the way the appropriation is done. This is to appropriate monies to the Minnesota Historical Society so it could run a grant program. Earlier this term, or this session, you heard a bill concerning the Nicola County Historical Society. This is what gave thought to me that perhaps we should run these bills in the future, these grant applications, through the Historical Society rather than the legislature. I'm happy to stand for questions. I don't want to take too much of the committee's time. No, the bill is the same, and I support Representative Burdahl's bill as well.
Hey, any discussion from committee members? No? Okay, so with that, I actually have to change my original motion, and the bill now will be included in the omnibus, recommended for inclusion during the omnibus bill. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, 21 and 23.
Yes, I'm presenting for Representative Murphy.
Okay, so at this point then, I'd like to move that House File 2123 be read and included and recommended for inclusion into the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We're asking for $200,000 to the Center for Hmong Studies at Concordia College or University here in St. Paul to be used for preservation of historical documents and artifacts. And the center was established in 2004 to provide significant place to cultivate the heritage of the Hmong people by honoring the past, understand the present, and prepare for the community for the future through research, publication, artifact, and historical collections, curriculum development, teaching conference, and community engagement. And the center housed the, I believe, the only Hmong archive in the country. And right with me is Li Pao Xiong. He is the director of the center.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the tape, and then we'll hear your testimony.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Li Pao Xiong. I am the director of the Center for Hmong Studies at Concordia University, St. Paul. We are at the end of the third decade since the first Hmong arrived in the United States as refugees. And with limited work of the Hmong archives, which is at the Center for Hmong Studies, not much has been done to collect, preserve, and protect historical documents and artifacts related to the Hmong in the United States. With over 60,000 Hmong in Minnesota, the largest concentration in the United States, many former CIA agents, military officers, filmmakers, and community members are calling the center to explore how they can transfer their collections to the center. Many elders also want to pass their stories on to the next generations. As such, there is also a need to collect oral histories and artifacts before these elders are gone. with over 100,000 books, documents, videos, artifacts. The international community, as well as local scholars and community members, have benefited from the collection at the center. Some of our visitors came from as far away as Australia, Germany, Thailand, China, and Laos to view the collection, to use the collection in their research work. Community members from throughout the United States also visited as well, and many are benefited from our work. For example, in a recent visit, an elderly a woman came on a bus, unannounced, on a busload of about 30 or so elders. She came and borrowed a video which the archives and the Center of Hmong Studies owned, which documented the plight of the Hmong from Vietnam to Laos, Thailand, and eventually the United States. In that video, the elderly patron saw her youngest brother, which she and her family thought had died in 1975. And as it turned out, he was very much alive and looking for them as well. So these are some of the significant, the importance of maintaining such collections. To date, we've received over 2,000 visitors to the center. We've also had scholars from throughout the state of Minnesota, University of Minnesota, Metro State. Today, we've had a scholar that came from Bethel College, Bethel University, came and looked at our research. Madam Chair, members of the community, your support will help us to continue our work by preserving many of the historical documents, stories, and artifacts related to the Hmong, and make it accessible to the scholarly community as well as community members, and particularly the young people. So with that, I urge your support.
Thank you very much. We have questions, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. I'm supportive of the project, but where does the money physically go? What do you see as your budget? What's it going to do?
Basically, the Madam Chair and Representative, the money will go towards acquisitions. Okay. For example, we have a former CIA person in Duluth who has a huge collection that he would like to give to the center. But he wants to make sure that we have the facility is able to accommodate the collection so that it won't deteriorate. So it's the acquisition, it's the preservation, and the transcription. We have a lot of videos, VHS videos, that we would like to transfer to DVDs. Many of the VHS videos, which dates back to the early 70s, and also many of the National Archive videos are fast deteriorating. And so we need somebody to be there to basically transfer into a DVD so that we can preserve that in the future.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, let it be on the record that Representative Murphy is also here.
Yes. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to speak to your bill at all, or do you feel? All right. So with that, are there any more questions from the committee? No? All right, well then I renew the motion, and this will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
You did a great job.
Yeah, you're a good stand up
there. Okay,
at this point then we'll hear House File 2050, Representative Khan. And Representative Khan, would you like to move the bill?
Yes, I'd like to move this bill, House File 2050, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I'm with you this week to explain the history of why we need this and how valuable it is for Romania.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, and then we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, good afternoon. My name is Stanley Romanstein, and I'm president of the Minnesota Humanities Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to speak very briefly in support of House File 2050. The Minnesota Humanities Commission is a nonprofit organization, a 501c3, created in 1971 as a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities and as an arm of Minnesota state government. We work with educators, schools, and communities to create strong programs in the humanities, programs in American and world history, geography, languages and literature, poetry, ethics, civics and social studies, strong programs in the humanities that develop a workforce with the ability to think creatively and critically to contribute to Minnesota's economy. The Humanities Commission began receiving general operating support from the legislature in 1978 through a line item appropriation in the state budget. In 1995, in addition to steadily increasing general operating support, the state appropriated bonding money, which enabled the commission to purchase and renovate the former education wing of the Gillette Children's Hospital. The building, which is now known as the Humanities Education Center, houses the commission's offices and provides space for the commission's programs and for meetings and conferences held by other state entities, including the Minnesota Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Labor and Industry, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Revenue, and the Judicial Branch, and others. In 1996, the state legislature increased the commission's biennial appropriation in recognition of the cost incurred in operating the education center. State support for general operating needs made it possible for the Humanities Commission not only to operate the education center, but to meet its obligations to educators, schools, and communities, and to build a wide array of strong partnerships with Minnesota's corporate and foundation community, the Cargill and General Mills Foundations, McKnight and Bush Foundations, and others. The commission matches state investment dollar for dollar with support from the private sector. In 2001, the legislature increased the commission's biennial appropriation to $2 million and requested that we create a process for naming a state poet laureate. We did as the legislator requested, and we stood ready to add the Poet Laureate program to our portfolio, pending further action by the legislature and the governor. In the spring of 2003, Governor Pawlenty unallotted the balance of the commission's biennial appropriation, and in response to the staggering deficit facing the state in 2003, the legislature provided no support for the commission throughout the 2004-2005 biennium. The commission had little choice but to reduce its programming and staff by more than a third. We reduced or eliminated altogether work on the Poet Laureate Program, the Minnesota Book Awards, and the Learning and Retirement Network, an initiative that reached more than 40,000 adults in 24 communities spread throughout Minnesota. The legislature did reduce support for the Humanities Commission in the 2006-2007 biennium, but targeted the $800,000 appropriation directly to the commission's work with K-12 teachers. By failing to provide any general operating support since 2003, the state has saddled the Humanities Commission with a wonderful but very costly facility, weakened the commission's ability to create viable public-private partnerships with Minnesota's corporate and foundation community, and compel the commission to divert scarce program dollars to support general operating needs. House File 2050 would provide much needed support for the Humanities Commission, and I would urge you to include House File 2050 in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Kahn,
do
you want to speak in?
No, I can't add enough words to think of how. First of all, I urge everyone to go to the facility at the former Gillette Hospital. The renovation was absolutely sparkling. I've been to some conferences there and so forth. Also, some of the things that the Humanities Commission is directly responsible for, maybe you were able to do this with your K-12. You know, the first translation of Good Night Moon into Hmong, I think, yes? And other similar kinds of activities that were directly responsible to the special population that we have in Minnesota.
Did anybody have a question? Okay. Representative Saylor?
Actually, I have an oral amendment to this bill. I've had discussions over the past several weeks with representatives from the Humanities Commission, also with the author of this bill, and with Chairman Yaros, just regarding lifelong learning organizations, which had been formerly funded from the Minnesota Humanities Commission. We just wanted to make sure that that piece went back in. And the wording that I would recommend would be of the amount appropriated to the Minnesota Humanities Commission, 10% will be dedicated to eligible lifelong learning programs. And I do have that written down, so I could pass that to you this time. Just to describe the eligible organizations, if you would like that as well, I do have that.
Were you intending, Madam Chairman, were you intending to put that into the language or?
Yes. And that eligible organizations include lifelong learning organizations in greater Minnesota communities which do not receive financial support from other larger educational institutions.
Representative Saylor, do you have that written down?
I do.
That would be lovely. Oh, the second piece there, okay.
Correct.
All right. So at this point, then, I'd like to reread the oral amendment. And that, so we're going to be adding two at the end of, at the end here of after 2007 period, we're adding the next line of the amendment appropriated to the Minnesota Humanities Commission, 10% will be dedicated to eligible lifelong learning programs. Eligible organizations include lifelong learning organizations in greater Minnesota communities which do not receive financial support from other larger educational institutions. Does everyone understand the amendment? Is there any discussion? All, right, all those in favor?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to get some examples of lifelong learning organizations that would be eligible with this.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, and members, there, I have one example right here. It's the Headwater Center for Lifelong Learning. If you would like, I could pass this information around. But basically, they have like programs that come into the community. These are for oftentimes retired people, but not restricted to, because many people within the communities do attend these. And that would be in, why, in particular, in greater Minnesota areas that are not directly connected or receive financial support from the larger institutions, such as Winona University, State University. And I do also think that perhaps Mr. Romanson could answer a few more questions on this, but I will say that also there is one organization in Bagley, one in Bemidji, and there are three or four others. Is that not correct, Mr. Romanson?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Saylor, that's correct. Out of the network of 24 organizations, there are 6 to 10 that are not connected with larger educational institutions. Many over the years affiliated with either Minnesota colleges, private colleges, or University of Minnesota campuses in their communities, and took advantage of programs that they could have there. The ones to which Representative Saylor has referred are really standalone organizations that provide an invaluable service to people in small communities. I've had the privilege over the last 5 years to attend a lot of their programs. They sponsor public policy conversations on the role of money in the democratic system, Minnesota's approach to immigration. They sponsor intergenerational dialogues between teenagers and older adults. They find ways to bring public policy discussions on ethics and civics and social studies into the community, and quite often they do so with no support from any kind of larger institutions. And fundraising for them is virtually impossible.
Further, I would just like to add, Madam Chair, that they were completely cut. These organizations were all completely cut in the last budget go-round, so they were really left with absolutely nothing to continue their programs in these. And they're, you know, just small little programs, but they mean a great deal. And as Mr. Romanstein was explaining, they fill quite a gap and do quite a bit for public education at all levels in our small communities.
Thank you, Representative Saylor. Do any more questions?
Madam Chair, I think I do know the answer to this, but there isn't a problem with the exclusion that's in that.
those who are all able to maintain some, ones that are being excluded, were able to maintain some level of funding. And,
Madam Chair, President Cohen, yes.
Okay. Now, the audio listeners are totally confused at this point about what we're doing, I'm sure. So at this point, I think we need to vote on the amendment. Everybody will agree to that. So do we need to read the amendment, or is everybody?
No.
Okay. So at this point, if we could please take a vote on the oral amendment. All those in favor? Some folks saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Then the amendment is adopted. And... Yep, okay.
One question, Madam Chair. So you've come out of 2 years of the $800,000 that you received was very restricted. And now you're going to start the new buy-in with $1 million with only 10% of it restricted. So is this to fly on new wings now, or what happens?
Mr. Romanstein?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, first, we stopped operating at annual multi-hundred-thousand-dollar deficits. Last year, our deficit was $426,000, and it was the third fiscal year that we had run a deficit. We had never done that in our history. So the first thing is we stop operating at deficit. The second thing is we do restore some basic services to smaller communities. And we are able to devote program dollars from private corporations and foundations directly back to programs instead of trying to move those dollars into general operations.
Yeah. Representative Kahn?
Madam Chairman, it's interesting that we were much more destructive than just taking away the appropriation. One of the things that we did do was that we removed the statutory designation of the Humanities Commission. And one of the things that we discovered when we did that was that we lost the, well, you probably should tell what happened to federal funding. We lost the...
Mr. Robinson?
Madam Chair, yes. We lost the ability to receive federal funds. But that's, we
have to have a state designation.
Because of that restriction?
No. Because we did much more than Mr. Romanstein described. We also removed, just totally wiped it out of state government. You know, whenever anyone asks, do we ever do anything when we get rid of something? We actually did get rid of something. It didn't take very long before we found out it was a mistake that we were then losing the ability to access from the National Humanities Commission because we didn't have a state one. So Representative Sikora brought that back in and then brought in the funding for education.
And that brought up, okay.
Peterson,
I see.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Representative Bly.
I had a question that relates to the more serious problem of your having the funding. I support what you're doing, and as a teacher, I made some use some years ago of materials and things that you provided. But I'm curious if the term that No Child Left Behind is taken has adversely affected your ability to work with schools because of their narrower focus, and a lot of what you do is interdisciplinary, even though it's within the humanities, it helps us understand that these things are interrelated. And I'm wondering if you could say something about how that has affected you at all, if it has, and I'm asking that question.
Mr. Romanstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Blythe. Actually, No Child Left Behind has increased our ability to work with schools.
Okay,
because No Child Left Behind and the new Minnesota State Education Standards require a much greater depth of knowledge on the part of K-12 teachers. So we expect K-3 teachers to understand and be able to teach about the industrialization of China and Native American history and culture, the geography of Africa, things that they say, I'm not an expert in this field, how am I supposed to teach that? So there's actually a greater demand for our work now than there was before No Child Left Behind, even given its other problems.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the number two co-author of the Con Poet Laureate Bill, I was wondering, is that program being restored as well, the Poet Laureate?
Mr. Romanstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, my understanding is that given an appropriation from the state, we will move forward with the Poet Laureate program. And gladly.
Representative Erdahl.
And basically, Madam Chair, I took the Phil Krenke spot on the bill, so I'm sure it'll just fly ahead now.
Madam Chairman,
Representative Kahn.
We can discuss whether we want some language in the House bill. At the moment, the we did get to another obstruction from the chairman of the Governmental Operations Committee, who didn't want to hear the bill. The tactic this year is to go through the Senate. I think we're moving in that direction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, any more questions? All right, so at this point then, Representative Kahn, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, that House File 2050 be laid out for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
So moved.
Okay, at this point now we need to have the adoptions for the minutes. Thank you very much for your assistance. Adoption of minutes from March the 19th. Anybody want to move that?
I'll move the minutes that we approve the minutes from that meeting.
Thank you very much, Representative Blatt. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. At that point, there's nothing else on the agenda, so this meeting is adjourned.